This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Getting to the doctor can be incredibly difficult without a car. For many North Carolinians in urban and rural areas, public transportation is their lifeline to groceries, healthcare, and a paycheck. Transit isn't just buses. Along the coast, the network includes the ferry system. Here's Jed Dixon, a former captain and deputy director for North Carolina's ferries.
Our role has continued to be to connect people and places, and we're an extension of the highway, and it's vitally important now. The people that live there, they count on the ferries for everything. The day-to-day travel on and off the island, they count on it for deliveries. They count on it for us bringing the tourists over to spend money on Ocracoke and improve the economy there. And after Hurricane Dorian, that role was really just highlighted and shown the importance of the ferry system. I mean, they counted on us to bring over the supplies and the workers they needed to clean up after the storm and repair all the damage and really get their lives back together.
That was Jed Dixon from the Ferry Division. While mass transit remains a critical service, with multiple strangers sitting in a vehicle together, it's also a public health risk during this pandemic. I'd like to welcome Julie White to the program now. She's the North Carolina Department of Transportation Deputy Secretary for Multimodal Transportation. Julie, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks, Anita.
Also with us is Noreen McDonald. She's the chair of the Department of City and Regional Planning at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and the director of the Carolina Transportation Program. Noreen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So, Julie, for those of us in urban areas, buses may be the thing we're most familiar with when we think of the term public transportation, but there are so many kinds of transit all around the state of North Carolina. Give us some of the sense of the variety.
That is such a great question, Anita. And one of the things I think that you're highlighting is how most people think of transit. They think of, say, our robust bus systems in Chapel Hill, in the Triangle, in the Charlotte area. But we actually have 98 transit systems in North Carolina, nearly one per county. And our bus systems are equally vital in our rural areas as they are in our urban. In our rural areas especially, our seniors need to move often pretty far, say, for their health care. As we know, we don't have hospitals in every county in North Carolina. So we have bus systems, for example, in the mountains that'll run a van pool a couple counties over to the nearest hospital. I know one in particular runs a daily dialysis van. They move our seniors to the grocery store. They move folks to work, which can often be quite a distance. So that would be one example. Another example, which you highlighted at the top of the program, was our ferry system. Another would be the state's rail system. We run an inner-city rail program between Raleigh and Charlotte, and, for example, a number of our college students use that to get from home to college, since so many of our colleges are along that line. We have just a wide diversity of transit options in North Carolina that are incredibly vital to moving many, many different parts of our population around.
Noreen, I mean, one of the interesting things that this pandemic has illuminated for us are the ways that transit infrastructure influences healthcare. I mean, you heard Julie describe, you know, all of the ways that transit is really essential for getting us to and from basic services. But there's also deep connections with, you know, what the spaces look like that we move about in and how that connects with public health. So I'd love to hear kind of what's unique about that particular connection in this moment.
So transit, as Julie was saying, is absolutely critical, but it's also a place where when it's working well, there's lots of people on the bus or lots of people on the train or even in some of the van services that Julie was talking about where you're trying to coordinate it. So many people are going to the dialysis appointment at the same time or going to the hospital at the same time. And so COVID has been so incredibly challenging for everybody, but really essentially for transit system because it now means that they have to try to do in some ways the opposite of what they've always tried to do. They want to have or need to have fewer people on the bus. They need to be maintaining the cleaning and the sanitizing even more frequently than they would have normally done. And the risks are really critical for the bus drivers, for the operators, as well as the passengers. And so there's been an incredible amount of effort put in, but it is a really difficult situation because you're essentially having to run a very different type of system, which was actually much more expensive to run.
Yeah, I want to hear from one of the workers who is on buses in Durham. She's a bus operator named Tanya Burnett for Go Durham, and she's talking about kind of what her experience has been like in this pandemic, riding and driving the buses every day.
Some passengers, you know, they are okay with wearing the masks and stuff, and then it's just some that just won't even put them on. You're asking to put them on, they won't. And then they get in the back of the bus or in the middle of the bus and just start coughing, and everybody's looking at them like, could y'all please put on your mask? And he was like, why should I wear a mask or whatever? And it's just tough because you're on a confined bus. Well, the stuff is closed, and, you know, it's been hot, so the windows are actually closed. So it's circulating through the bus, you know, so it's no way that you can escape it.
That's Tanya Burnett, a bus operator for Go Durham, and I'm here with UNC professor Noreen McDonald and Julie White from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. So, Julie, hearing those concerns that Tanya mentions in that clip, I mean, how has the Department of Transportation responded to make sure that drivers and operators feel safe? What kind of adaptations are you trying to make?
That's a great question. Our transit systems across the state are doing so much to protect our drivers. We had a driver shortage before COVID, and now with COVID, we have even more challenges in, you know, keeping our drivers healthy so we can run our systems. So we've seen transit systems install plexiglass around our drivers. Our drivers are provided face coverings. Many of our systems have gone fareless, meaning there isn't that exchange of money and touching. So a wonderful way to address that in this time. Some have gone to electronic card or pay by phone, again, to reduce the, you know, amount of interaction. We are providing hand sanitizer. Of course, we're limiting the number of passengers on buses so that we can keep the social distancing. And then the disinfecting and cleaning and fogging of buses is being done multiple times a day. The latest thing that we're looking into, we're actually forming a partnership with the UNC School of Public Health because, you know, the science is changing every day on cleaning. We're making great advancements, and so we're forming this partnership so that we can provide the latest, most up-to-date information to the transit system statewide on, you know, ultraviolet lights, air purifiers, trying to make sure that we give them the information that they need to deploy the very best options in the immediate time. You know, the most important thing to know is that our transit systems are doing all kinds of improved cleaning and sanitizing procedures to provide a really safe option to the folks in our state who need to get to work and get to their health care. We don't want anyone to feel that that they would opt not to get the health care they need or get to their job for fear of the environment on the bus and the van. So I want to be sure and communicate that our transit systems are doing an absolutely excellent job ensuring safe transportation for our traveling public.
Noreen, how do you feel about the innovations so far? And maybe you can respond to another thing that Tanya said later in the clip was, you know, she's wearing a mask, she washes her hands, and she can encourage riders to wear their masks, but if they take them off, ultimately there is not a ton that she can do while she's still driving the bus. So I wonder if you could respond to that concern of hers and how you feel like the state's doing.
Mm-hmm. So I think what Tanya said echoes what we all feel when we're out in public and what we hear from essential workers across the state and really across the nation about the difficulties of dealing with people that aren't maybe following social distancing or wearing masks. I think that's actually why the steps that Julie was talking about are so critical about trying to protect the bus operators by putting more, putting the plexiglass in, increasing the cleaning frequencies. All of those are the protective factors that get put in place. But we are seeing practices and science evolve on this. You know, the parts of our country that sort of faced COVID earlier, bus operators, many died because they were on the front lines, perhaps before some of the agencies were able to put in place these practices. So this was a big issue in New York, in New Orleans. Several had very high death rates among operators. So her concerns are real, and what Julie's talking about is trying to bring, follow the CDC guidelines and even really go beyond with the School of Public Health partnership that she's referring to. But it's not a zero-risk environment because we have essential workers that need to get to essential jobs. And as you were talking about, we have people that need to get to medical care, need to get to food sites, you know, need these services. They're not services that can be taken offline very easily.
I wonder how this is differing in urban and rural areas, Julie. You recently brought together all 98 public transit departments in the state to hear about how they've been responding to the pandemic as well as the recession. And I'm curious how things are looking different in different parts of the state.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. You know, it is easier to create social distancing in a traditional large urban bus than it is in a rural van. When you create that social distancing in a van, you're running a van with very few people in it. Our rural systems have been really innovative, I think, in thinking that through. They've gone to the trouble of hanging shower curtains in the vans to create, you know, independent spaces. They're running more vans because they can put fewer people in them. So I think the financial burden is being felt equally, just differently in the urban systems versus the rural systems. And I also should note, we had the wonderful blessing that the Federal Transit Administration sent us enormous number of face masks for us to send to our rural transit systems. So we are actually getting those to systems. So if somebody is coming to the van or the bus without a mask, they'll have them there to be able to give folks to wear them.
I want to talk about funding and the loss of fares. You mentioned earlier, Julie, that you're doing mostly fareless transit so that you're minimizing contact. But that obviously leads to a huge dip in revenue for local departments. So, I mean, what are some of the funding difficulties facing local transit systems in the state in this moment? Julie, let's start with you.
Sure. So we talked about, obviously, revenues are down, whether you've gone fareless or your ridership is down. We know that there's an incredible amount of financial pressure in our local governments, which help cover the cost of transit systems. State funds are down. I mean, everybody's funds are down. The great news about that is that Congress recognized the incredibly important role that transit plays in moving these essential workers and seniors and such around. So they passed a bill that sent over $300 million into the state of North Carolina for transit systems, both urban and rural. So that will go a long way in making up for those various financial losses. It won't cover all of it, but it certainly, I think, demonstrated our Congress's recognition of the really important role transit is playing right now.
So, yeah, we did get that huge amount of money from the CARES Act. But at the same time, the state legislature overwhelmingly approved massive budget cuts to the Department of Transportation last month. And so I'm wondering, Noreen, I mean, what is the end result of this for local departments? The CARES Act funding will go a long way. But once that is used up with these current budget cuts, where will that leave local transit departments?
Local transit departments are in a very difficult financial position. As Julie mentioned, the CARES Act money has been critical, but the way it was implemented in North Carolina, at the same time they got the federal CARES Act money, they lost some of the state support. And they lost it at a time when, as we've just discussed, that their expenses are actually going up because in order to operate the services as safely as possible, they're running maybe more service because they can't have as many people on the bus or on the van. They're cleaning more. So all of those things make it more expensive to operate. And so they're looking at decreases. And, you know, and also these issues are really hitting North Carolina, but they're hitting all the transit systems across our country. So the responses that we see playing out are some cuts in some of the routes that are currently being operated. And we also see, and that could translate to potentially longer wait times for people that need to get places. So it's a very difficult position. You know, I think what Julie was pointing out is all the revenue sources, fares. We use a lot of sales tax money to pay for transit. We use gas taxes, local government funds. All of that stuff is down. And so it actually might play out even more over the next year or so as some of those downstream impacts become clearer on budgets.
One of the parts of the state legislature's bill that was controversial was a large chunk, 51.2 million eliminated for state support for mass transit. So, Julie, I wonder how that strikes you. I know you talked about CARES Act funding and some of that is going to support these mass transit efforts. But do you have any concerns moving forward about the ability to provide public transit in all parts of the state?
So, as I said, the good news is the CARES funds make up for a large amount of that. The DOT budget overall took a really big hit, as Noreen said, with the loss of motor fuels tax. DMV fees are reduced. So, across the board, every program at DOT has less funding. But the good news is, as I said, we got the CARES money from the federal government to make up a large part of that. We're also examining some other programs in our transit budget that might have some funds we could redeploy that aren't being used for their typical programming right now. So we're examining that to see what we can do to make up the difference. As Noreen said, that the real question here is how long are the financial impacts as to whether or not that CARES money will be sufficient. So I think none of us know at this time how long this will go on for. We do know that transit is an absolutely essential service, and if we don't keep our transit systems running, we're going to see its impact in things like unemployment and the health of our population. So I think it is imperative for all of us that we figure out how to solve this.
And much of the federal money that local departments rely on requires matching funds. I don't have a lot of time left, but Noreen, could you tell me briefly about that and the kind of impact that that may have moving forward?
Yeah, so that's an important point. And some of those matching funds that local governments or the state might have been able to put for towards that are also impacted, as we've said, by these decreases in sales tax and other tax revenues that are coming in. You know, so this is a juggernaut. I mean, you know, there is another bill being debated right now in Congress. Ideally, it will contain more support for public transit across the United States. But that number is not fixed yet. So, you know, this would ideally be a different conversation if Congress is able to identify transit as a critical need and provide even more resources for it. And, you know, that may be one of the most viable solutions in this critical junction right now to keep transit operating as the essential service that it is.
I wish I had more time, but we're going to have to end it there for now. Julie White is the North Carolina Department of Transportation Deputy Secretary for Multimodal Transportation, and Noreen McDonald is the Director of the Carolina Transportation Program and Chair of the Department of City and Regional Planning at UNC Chapel Hill. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thanks, Anita.
Thanks. Bye.